she continued, another inventor independently made another such craft using the power generated by the lift of electrons. This one didn't go quite as far and was found in the mountains of one of your eastern states. Representatives of your government found it and traced it back to its inventor. It should come as no surprise to you that they hired him on the spot, perhaps in order to keep the information under their control. So you see, you have had wingless, silent aircraft on your Earth for some time. It has just been all hushed up. She grinned, thoroughly enjoying the consternation she had just created in the classroom. I was amazed. She made it all sound so simple. She also explained that on this mothership there was an artificial gravity that was created that was more for the convenience of those on board than for an absolute necessity. It kept people from floating around, that is, unless they wanted to. Then they'd just use the power of their mind. Then I remembered how startled I had been when I first arrived on the mothership. I had seen my friend Aurora, from Earth, come floating into the scene when I had first arrived. As she came into view, she was wearing three small barred hawk feathers off to the side of her head. She grinned and told me, "I knew you could do it. I knew that if you tried hard, you would be able to come up to the mothership." As a matter of fact, her sudden appearance in this manner had been so strange at that time, that I had actually blocked it out of my mind. It was not until this moment that I remembered that she had actually floated into view. The instructor nodded at me. "That happens a lot when Earthlings first come up to our mothership," she continued. "If your mind doesn't understand what it is seeing, then it has a tendency to block out the memory of the event. Don't worry about it. As soon as you understand the science of what is happening, your mind will remove these mental blocks on its own and you can enjoy the wonder of everything that you see. Up here, our science is a lot of fun. In fact, science is much more fun up here than your science down on Earth. It has been turned into such hard work down on Earth." Her eyes twinkled. "Sometimes we think your Earth scientists are afraid to discover something new, for fear some of their colleagues might jump all over them and say, 'That's impossible. It is too crazy to be believable.' Those terms are not in our vocabulary up here. Instead we say, 'Why not?' We welcome all of you from Terra as fellow explorers of the universe. It is a really great place. Ever new, ever changing, there is always something new to discover." I sat up straight in my chair. This was an entirely new approach to learning. It made me hungry to learn much more. The way she explained the science, all of the complications were taken out of it. Science just became a really fun thing to study. We are explorers. I like that. Now time is an artificial construct which has been created for third dimensional Earth. You might even say it is what gives the third dimension its get up and go. At that, a ripple of laughter went around the room. 102 Now just for a moment, go back to the time when you were a child. Remember how you looked forward to each new day. Time seemed to stretch forward into forever. Time really is extended for children. If you were to go back and look at it now, the time you had as a child would seem to be twice as big as what you have available to use now. Heads were nodding all over the room. Then there is another quality of time. Can you remember doing something that you really love to do? You will say that time just flew by. You aren't wrong here either. Her eyes were twinkling again. I know many of you enjoy going to your dentist down there on Earth. There were groans among the students. It seemed to take forever, didn't it? So you see that time is actually a perception. The length of time varies as to whether you are enjoying yourself, or whether you wish the event would get over within a hurry. Now here is your homework, or maybe I should say your Earth Day work. When you retire back down to Earth, try to estimate the time something takes in different situations. Guess how much time has transpired when you play with your children. Guess how much time it takes to get through your grocery queue. That seems to take forever, doesn't it? But don't try to guess the length of time of your television programs. They are already pre-measured out and your brain knows that. It was already adjusted to time in that area. Have you ever planted seeds in the garden and waited forever for them to germinate? These are all examples of how your perception of time stretches to meet how you value it. Now isn't that our interesting thought? All of this information is enough for your brain to try to stretch around and to comprehend tonight. Come back tomorrow and we will share some other concepts that show how most of the limitations about your perception of science can be lifted. With that, Bian raised a hand in salute and waved us all to the door of the classroom. Bian had made everything seem to be so easy. As I had returned to my bed for the remainder of my rest time, I realized that she had not once referred to the laws of science. She had instead been talking about the freedom of science. That was a much better way to think about science. It took me back to the time when I was about 12 years old. I had devoured everything I could find about science. I pored over every explanation about how and why things worked. Somewhere along the line, I had become discouraged about how hard it was to understand science. Then there were those awful formulas where none of the abbreviations made any sense at all. I couldn't even hang on to the memory what an abbreviation stood for, much less what it was supposed to do. The person who had developed a formula and was explaining it would go marching merrily on, leaving me behind with seemingly nothing but a bunch of chicken scratches on paper. Now in this class, everything looked different. There was a reason behind the flow of information. Bian had tied in the explanations of science to things we were already familiar with. I looked forward to coming to this kind of a class again. She was right. The next day seemed to pass all too slowly. I could hardly wait to be able to travel up to the mothership at the beginning of my sleep time for another class. When the class opened, we were treated to a three-dimensional video of a thunderstorm. There was a brilliant lightning strike coming from all over the room. Nevertheless, we earthlings all flinched when a great thunderclap seemed to come from directly behind us. We knew that it had only followed the lightning strike, but we couldn't help flinching. We knew it was a video, but it was so real in 3D. Then the sound of the rain splattering on the ground came at us from all sides. I almost expected to get all wet, to feel it hitting my arms, stinging with intensity. 104, no doubt about it, the 3D video made you feel that you were really there. Thunderstorms on Earth are beautiful, but they can be terrible as well. We heard BM's voice from the back of the room. They are a reminder of how much power there is in the Earth itself. Thunderstorms can keep you humble too. You can be in them, but there is no control that you can have over them. We are back to electrons and protons. That's what makes the lightning strike so beautiful. Notice how the path of the lightning is never exactly straight from one point to another. There are always obstacles in its path that you cannot see that shove the lightning off to one side and then another. You can surely realize that this is a shifting in the balance of the pulsing of the electrons and the drawing power of the protons at that particular point. Now let's enjoy the rest of the storm, without having to get wet. Then began multiple flashes of light followed by multiple thunderclaps that came from all sides. Their echoes even overlapped the new lightning flashes. I was sure that I heard music in the background. Then I recognized the rousing music of the thunder and lightning polka. This is a wonderful painting in sound that sketched out musically what we were hearing and seeing all around us. I simply let go and let the music surround me. It was wonderful, and very invigorating. There is more than just a light and sound show going on during a thunderstorm. The electricity going through the air creates ozone that brings a refreshment and purification to the air. It energizes the human body. And of course the rain will wash out dust particles and pollution from the air. You could say that it is Mother Nature's wash day. There were chuckles in the room again. Now I'm going to ask you a question that you must find the answer from your own observation. Don't answer too quickly. You may want to check it out. Does lightning strike the ground? Or does the ground send up the lightning flash to clouds overhead? No. No. Don't give me your answer right now. Wait till you have experienced a thunderstorm near your own home. You might think you could get the answer from the video here, but then again maybe not. You might think we had twisted the images to suit our own purpose. You must get the answer from down on Earth, and you must get it from your own observation. Then we will talk about it here again. She waved us out of the room again. Some homework. I mean, some earthwork. Several nights later, one of the class members spoke up about that lightning. It goes up from Earth and into the clouds. No, it doesn't. Everyone knows that lightning strikes from the clouds to the ground. Someone else broke in. Bian laughed with delight. Well, you have found differing opinions. Only one of you is right, of course. Which one? Someone asked. Now I'm not going to tell you that. What you have to do now is go back and sharpen your powers of observation. Her eyes sparkled. Unlike classrooms on Earth, it is my job to ask the questions, and it is your job to find the answers yourself. There aren't any tests with grades up here in the classrooms on the mothership. You have to find out through your own life experiences. It is the only way that you can be sure to know what to believe. Don't take it from an outside source. Check it out. There were groans from all of us Earthlings in the classroom. It took some time, but several nights later the class finally came to a consensus as to how and where lightning struck. No, Kartriya here is not going to tell you what we came up with, either. Go check it out. The hardest question that she asked is to find an answer to, was actually a very simple question. A resident of Terra brought us this question. He said that he knew that chickens could get calcium from the oyster shell that they usually eat. Then they would have calcium available in their system to create the frameworks for their eggshells. Cracked oyster shell was regularly purchased by most people who raised chickens. However, there was no calcium in his mother's chicken yard, but he had seen some chickens busily eating mica scattered about the yard. There was no calcium available from oyster shell or anything else, anywhere around. There was only the mica available, which didn't contain calcium, but contained silica instead. He fully expected that the chickens would lay eggs with shells that were paper thin, because they lacked calcium from oyster shell. To his surprise, he saw that the eggshells were just as strong as those laid by the chickens that had eaten the oyster shell, which had lots of calcium. The question is, where did they get the calcium for their eggshells? Bian did give us one hint: go look at the periodic table of the elements. We were learning to think in spite of ourselves. You may need a pencil and paper to figure this one out. Then one evening we were sorted out into small groups and sent to different classrooms. I wasn't sure what to make of it all, but went along to my new classroom. There was no more fun and games now. It was all serious business. Funny thing though, as we filed in we saw that this classroom had a clear plastic cage with about 50 mouse traps in it. They had all been very carefully set. Our new instructor, a man this time, said, "Now gather round and we are going to see a demonstration of an atomic bomb." Our eyebrows raised up at that. "Go ahead, stand up close so you can get a real good view. One thing though, since this is just a demonstration, you won't be getting any radiation. Ready?" Of course we were ready and we were as curious as could be. He held up a small white ball. "It's just a ping pong ball, but see what power it has. The power of the atom." He dropped it into the box through a small hole in the top of the clear cage. Everything inside the plastic cage broke loose all at once. As the ball fell, it hit two mouse traps, which released their catch as they flew up in the air. These fell down and bounced on three others. We saw a fine example of a chain reaction. There were mouse traps flying everywhere, but they were safely contained inside the clear plastic cage. They made a terrible racket, however. The instructor was delighted with the shocked looks on our faces. "Now just imagine that those mouse traps were atoms and there were a million of them in there instead of just 50. They would be causing a chain reaction, and you can get some kind of idea of the destructive power of an atomic bomb. I hope you never tell any of those bad bomb jokes again. They really aren't funny." And he was dead serious. We were then treated to some 3D videos of atomic bomb tests that have been conducted on Earth. They inclined pictures of before and after. They were pretty awesome in the power of their destruction. Then there was also computer modeling of what had happened to the Earth's crust underneath the ground zero of each test site. The sites all looked like cracked eggs held together with a very thin skin. This was especially noticeable in the area under the state of Nevada. These test areas have now become very vulnerable to earthquakes. The crust of the Earth may break wide open in that area or even just subside with one strong earthquake. Ocean water could even flow in to fill the void. We left the classroom with very serious faces. No Earth homework was assigned this time. Someone whispered to me as we filed out, I have seen that demonstration before of the mouse traps. It was in my physics class in college down on Earth. Maybe so, but it is still pretty impressive, I whispered back. Next we got a lesson in geology and archaeology. We saw tiny pointed seashells that have been found in rich topsoil from the state of Iowa. Then in the Central American country of Guatemala there were layers of dark humus comprising the topsoil that was as much as 12 inches thick. This was overlaid with a layer of even thicker volcanic ash, now called pumice. This could be seen along the sites through the lulls and mountains for the highway going into Guatemala City. These alternating layers were repeated like a layer cake, sometimes 5 or 7 layers high. Each layer of pumice represented violet earth changes as volcanic ash overlaid the topsoil. Native peoples could sometimes be seen digging out the pumice to use for cleaning purposes in kitchens and other places. However, the diggers always left good-sized columns in the pumice caves they were digging out of the hillside. This was to keep the cave areas from collapsing in on the diggers. The video also showed beautiful black, red and green volcanic glass outcrops which can be found along the eastern edges of what would be the Rocky Mountains extending into Mexico and Guatemala. This obsidian had been valuable to the ancient peoples of these areas, the Aztecs and the Mayas. Obsidian was sharper than a modern steel knife, albeit somewhat fragile. Iowa's rich farmland was also shown to be underlaid with enormous rocks. Many of these rocks were 10 feet or more in diameter. These giant rocks were left over from the movements of ancient glaciers from another time. 5 rows of these moraines of glacial rocks lie horizontally across Iowa. These rows of rocks were left after successive glacier meetings during what was called the Wisconsin Ice Age. Then we saw pictures of ancient mastodons with fresh buttercups still in their mouths, which had been found fresh frozen in the tundra of Siberia. But the most surprising of all was discovering that coal which bore the imprint of huge tropical ferns had been found in deep ice cores taken from Antarctic. The geological record is quite clear. The Earth has not always been as quiet as it is now. This quietude may soon be broken. Humanity hasn't helped a bit with its atomic tests. One day we were sent to new classrooms. Much of the instruction now came from third-dimensional videos. There was much computer modeling in 3D. It didn't resemble anything I remembered studying in Earthside classrooms. In addition to the computer modeling, there were formulas, only this time I could understand them and even hang on to the memory of what they stood for. This was far-reaching science. One evening before class began, I looked around at my fellow students. They had come from far and wide and were a mixed group, both men and women. I saw one person that somehow I knew came from New Jersey, another from California, 2 people from Canada, 1 from Japan and 1 man whom I thought might be from the Netherlands. He was tall, blonde with somewhat wavy hair. I was curious about him and moved to go over to talk to him. Then I heard the classroom monitor say sharply, "Later, we aren't here for socializing in this classroom. This is serious class work." Okay, there is no arguing with that. At the end of each class we would all move toward the door. However, as I went through the door, I was hit by a light buzzing. As soon as I came through the door, my mind was a complete blank. I turned around and also found a look of puzzlement also on the faces of my fellow students. What was that class all about? I ventured. I don't know. I can't remember a thing, not even the subject of the class. I hoped that maybe I'd do better on other nights. Not a chance. As soon as we passed through the door with its buzzing, we forgot everything that we had just learned over the last hour and a half. The only thing I was sure of was that it was highly scientific, because there was a persistent memory of complicated formulas, of computer models, and scientific theory. This happened night after night. I began to get upset. What was the use of being in class when I couldn't even get back home to Earth with the memory of what we had been studying so intensely in the classroom? There seemed to be no explanation forthcoming from any of the teachers. They just evaporated after class was over. I might have to go to the commander, Edros, to find out what was happening. One particular evening during the class break at 2 o'clock a.m. I set off for the office of Adros, the commander of this mothership. He always seemed to know when I was coming and met me just outside of his conference room. "Commander Adros, sir. What is going on? We take time to go to class. But then when we come out, we can't remember a thing. Are we incompetent? Are we wasting our time? It is very frustrating to go to a class and as soon as we come out to have no memory at all of what we have been studying. What is going on in these classes?" I was very upset. Adros spoke very gently to me. "In the class that you are in, you are studying advanced concepts of science. This science is not yet known upon the earth. Some scientists are grasping for this information and some of it they call quantum physics. They do not yet understand all of it. This is the subject material that you are being taught. Now there are people on the earth who would misuse this information at this time, what with all the wars, and attempts by secret elements of world governments to attempt to control humanity. At this point in time most of humanity simply cannot be trusted with this information. It cannot be given openly to the earth." He looked at me intently, ever aware of my thoughts telepathically. "Yes, Kartriya, you could be trusted with this information because you personally would not misuse it. However, there would be certain people on earth who, if they knew that you had this kind of knowledge at your command, would knock on your door in the middle of the night, and say come with me. They would try to threaten you, or imprison you, or even torture you, in order to try to get you to release this knowledge to them. Therefore, we have decided that it is for your own protection that the exact method of how this science operates is veiled from your conscious mind after the class. If and when it is considered to be safe upon the earth, the full knowledge will be made available to you. The veils will be pulled back from your conscious memory. In the meantime, simply consider that the situation is as if you have the actual knowledge available to you on a conscious level." This was something I had never considered before, that simply the possession of knowledge could be dangerous. "All right, sir, I'll not worry about it anymore. The classes are really interesting and straightforward." I leaned forward and whispered. "Sometimes I get the feeling that we have gone to some great Disneyland up here on the mothership and what we are truly getting in these classrooms is learning that is disguised as entertainment." This delighted Adros and I heard his full-throated laughter. "Then indeed our interdictors are succeeding," he said. Chapter 14 Repairs to the Healing Facility. Life aboard the mothership was no longer so laid back. After the end of the war in the Persian Gulf, and conflicts in the world of Earth down below had been escalating in many localities such as Bosnia or Africa. This created medical crises aboard ship almost constantly. I would hear, "There are more injured coming. Let's put them in one of the public areas for a while." The little doctor was almost never seen now. When I did see him, he was rushing here and there, checking on his injured chicks. He was very fortunate to have a great number of very capable medical assistants, who were all types of beings. They worked intensely on the casualties of the wars that were erupting like cancers all over the earth. There didn't seem to be a visible hierarchy of doctors with titles. Everyone seemed to have qualifications that were well known to all. In truth, the awfulness of the injuries to the poor humans brought aboard the ship demanded that any being that was able to help them just get right to work. The telepathic abilities of the beings aboard the mothership smoothed out procedures of handling the injured of humanity. The medical teams worked as easily as a set of complex gears, moving among the wounded, relieving pain and stopping the blood flow. Then the teams would gather to do the delicate job of repairing human tissue that was almost unrecognizable from their wounds. Whenever I was able to be there, I helped out in any way that I could. My help was accepted without formal credentials. It was often necessary to simply bring a sense of peace to those who had been wounded and let them know that they were in a place of safety. I did a lot of this kind of work. Many of them were civilians who lived in an area that had become a war zone. For the most part, they simply slept, for their bodies had been physically exhausted even before their injuries. Infections were no problem because the Pladian technology allowed them to transmute bacteria and viruses into something harmless. They simply zapped the infections with the appropriate frequency. This made the treatment facilities much simpler. Medical treatment could take place anywhere because infections could be absolutely control-led. This was a continuing source of amazement to me. I would see horribly injured people lined up right beside each other. The medical personnel moved from one to the other, reattaching severed arms and legs to their bodies and calming the hysterical minds of the traumatized humans who lived inside these mangled bodies. This hysteria sometimes posed the greatest problem of all. One evening I had been working with the medical teams taking out shrapnel from deep wounds. Long ago I had to set aside my antipathy for blood, because the medical teams could control bleeding so very well. We were setting up some of the injured personnel in rooms to be monitored by special equipment, when one man at the end of the room began screaming at the top of his lungs. Attendants tried to calm him, but it wasn't working very well. He sat up, whirled around, and jumped off the bed despite the fact that he had many wires and tubes attached. Wires going to the wall to the monitors broke as well as the tubes bringing him medications. He was completely unaware that he had broken the tubes and the wires from the monitors and that they were still attached. He looked around wildly and spotted the door. In a flash he was gone, bandages, tubes, wires and all. His attendants immediately gave chase. I felt sorry for both the injured man and his would-be rescuers. I heard a groan coming from someone standing nearby. It was one of the small workers who made repairs in the healing center. Another repair job to that wall. We just got that station fixed. Soon a crew of three small technicians about the size of Zeta Reticulans appeared, with tools and wires to begin repairs. It looked to be an impossible task. I moved closer to watch. Some of the wires were frayed at the wall. Other wires were completely missing. The only thing visible was a hole in the wall. I watched them work. I was fascinated as a wall panel was removed to reveal the wiring behind it. The panel was about 2 feet in diameter. The repair crew took a look at the damage. It looked like a bad case of silver-colored spaghetti inside the open MG. This is a bad one. It looks like someone may have to crawl in after some of the wires. They turned to the smallest member of the crew. You're going to have quite a job on your hands a little later. They all set to work. Small long fingers working nimbly to cut out the faulty wiring and replace it. I was impressed to see how efficiently they worked. Here in the confined quarters just inside the wall, their small size was a definite asset. They could reach their slender arms into places that would have been unreachable to me so that they could repair the wires. After a while they stepped back. It's your turn now, and the smallest member of the crew, barely 3 feet tall, picked up some tools and moved over to the opening. He began a slow crawl into the wall. In a moment the only thing that could be seen were his tiny feet. Do you have to do this very often? I asked. More often than we like. It's usually one of the hysterical types who breaks away like you just saw that causes all this mess. But we can fix it, we can fix anything. He said proudly. Very gently I said, I'm sorry that something like this has to happen. I realize that all of the beings who live on this mothership know of the goodwill of the medical personnel who work here and they understand that they will get well in record time. The reaction of my fellow Earthlings was embarrassing, but I was trying to explain the reasons. It is too bad, but those people you bring up here from Earth space who are terribly injured from the wars down in Earth space don't understand what a great healing facility that this is here. This room is very strange, unlike anything they have ever seen, and the appearance of some of you is very strange to them as well. They are already hysterical from their injuries, so the strangeness here only adds to their problems. The small crew chief turned his great luminous eyes on me with great interest. I swallowed hard but continued, in a war zone on Earth, people learn quickly that almost no one can be trusted. For this reason sometimes it isn't possible to calm them down so they can be worked on. Up here in the mothership you are not used to working in a situation where things can go wrong so easily. I waited to see the effect my words would have on them. The members of the repair team nodded thoughtfully, so I continued. I do believe though that there is a way to avoid having to do all these repairs all over again. Every time a hysterical patient ruins off down the hall with the tubes and wires to his equipment still attached. That would be nice. Do you have some ideas? The small team leader said, Yes, I do. When you bring the tubes and wires out of the wall, make a breakaway connection that will separate easily that goes to each wire and each tube.